98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. Brought to you by Collins Comfort Masters, proud home services partner of the Arizona Cardinals. 4 o'clock reset.
There we go. At 4 o'clock every day, we present to you the top stories of the day here on the Burns and Gambo show. The 4 o'clock reset, starting and ending with the Phoenix Suns, with all sorts of good stuff you need to know in between. We start with the Suns and the extension of the contract of general manager James Jones. It was announced today officially by the team after it was reported first by the Undefeated website. Quote, "It's a privilege to support our Suns and Mercury players, staff, employees, and our fans. The Valley is a special place, and I'm excited for the future," close quote.
Yeah, this came together pretty quickly. Wasn't too complicated. He's happy here. His family's here. He's done a great job. They love his ability to communicate with everybody, staff, players, management, fans, just everything. They really enjoy him. It's a multi-year contract, but what I found out today is, yeah, this wasn't something they had to work on for a long time. You know, once they decided everybody wanted to be here, they worked on it very quickly and got the deal done.
James Jones has obviously been knocking it out of the park for the last few years, hiring Monty Williams, trading for Chris Paul, signing Jay Crowder, Campaign, Saric, JaVale McGee, even Bismack Biyombo the last couple of weeks.
Kelly Oubre trade, Ricky Rubio.
Ricky Rubio is another one, right? I mean, just the moves he's made in the draft to get Cam Johnson. Everybody thought he was nuts. He has done so many good things as the general manager. It's a well-earned contract extension for him. Waiting on news from Major League Baseball, and it has not come down yet. The results of the Baseball Writers Association of America vote for the 2022 Baseball Hall of Fame class will be revealed today on MLB Network sometime within this hour. For Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and Curt Schilling, it's their last year on the ballot. For guys like Alex Rodriguez and David Ortiz, it's their first year on the ballot. It would appear, as of right now, the only one that has a really good chance of getting in is Ortiz in his first year of eligibility. Doesn't look good for Schilling. Bonds and Clemens are kind of question marks at this point, Gambo.
I checked with Schilling earlier. I go, look, any word yet? He goes, on what? I go, the Hall of Fame. He goes, dude, I'm getting fewer votes this year than last. So he's just not expected. And think whatever you want about him. He should be in the Hall of Fame.
I would agree.
He should be in that Hall of Fame.
Think whatever you want about him. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. I also feel the same way about Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, but I admit that I probably am in the minority on that one. Saints head coach Sean Payton stepping away from his position. He wouldn't call it a retirement. He didn't want to call it a retirement. Instead, it just seems like he needs some time off to sort of recharge his batteries. Maybe he goes into the media. Maybe he's just a fan. But there are many people who believe that this time a year from now, he could very well get back into coaching. If not with the Saints, then Gambo perhaps with somebody else.
Yeah, I like you said, right, he's under contract. So there's going to be some heavy compensation if the end game is, like, I want to get away for a year, do some TV, and then get back into it. Now, listen, I always thought Bill Cowher was going to get back in. He left. He went to TV. And I was like, he's going to be the Giants coach. And then a year went by, and 2 years went by, and 5 years went by, and all of a sudden, like, he ain't going back.
Yeah.
So some of those guys get into those TV deals, like, you're paying me this much money to work once a week? I'm good. I don't need to coach anymore.
And then other
so
guys,
we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, other guys get into TV like Bruce Arians, and they realize they can't curse on live television when they're calling a game. So on second thought, I'll go back into coaching because I can't say whatever I want to say when I'm on the air, baby. James Harden has not enjoyed living in Brooklyn and has voiced his frustrations regarding Kyrie Irving's part-time playing status. According to Bleacher Report, Harden has made it clear he intends to test out free agency, even if that leads him back to the Brooklyn Nets. So he might be nearing the end of his time with the Brooklyn Nets, potentially, Gambo.
Hey, didn't you used to be James Harden? Boy, he was such a big deal when he was in Houston, man. The beard. You never hear about him anymore. You just don't hear about him a whole lot. And, you know, you go to that team and you kind of get, you know, your Kevin Durant is just so powerful and in Kyrie and everything, but we'll see what happens. You know, maybe he got there and he said, you know what? I like being the main guy on a team. I don't like being a part of a big threesome. We'll see how it happens, but I wouldn't be surprised if he goes somewhere else.
And the Yotes are back on the ice tonight. They continue their road trip. They're in Pittsburgh. You can catch that action at 5 o'clock on ESPN 620 AM. Carl Vimelka is going to get the start tonight between the pipes, Gambo.
Such a good goaltender. I mean, really, their scouts did a really good job in finding him. Nobody knew anything about him a year ago, and he has been a terrific goaltender for them.
But our top story of the day today.
It is 115-109. This one is all over, and the Suns get the victory.
And with the win last night over the Utah Jazz, the Phoenix Suns are now 37-9 on the season. The best record in the NBA has also tied the team's best ever start through the first 46 games of a season. The 06-07 Suns team also started 37-9, Gambo, when it was all said and done.
Yeah, there's something special about this team. Now, you can talk about Utah not having their guys, and they played their asses off last night, but Devin Booker was not shooting the ball well. He was shooting it often, but he was not shooting it well. And the Suns found a way. They just always seem to find a way. And last night, a little bit different. Last night, it was Chris Paul. It was Chris Paul at the end of that game that absolutely took over. And you don't see that a whole lot, right? You see Chris Paul contribute, make some great baskets and some great plays. But last night, they needed Chris Paul to turn into a scorer. And boy, did he. Think about where they were in the fourth quarter of that basketball game after Rudy Gay put the Jazz up by 4, 95-91. Paul hits a jumper. Paul hits a three-pointer. Paul hits another three-pointer. Paul hits a free throw. Paul hits a running bank shot off the glass. Paul hits two free throws. Paul hits an elbow jumper. Burnsy, he took that game over last night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he completely did. There was a run within a run in the fourth quarter, and both of those runs were defined almost solely and entirely by what Chris Paul did when he was out there. They went on a 25-9 run. 22 of those points were either scored upon or assisted by Chris Paul. Within that run, there was a 15-6 run. Chris Paul scored or assisted on 13 of those 15 points. He also played 40 minutes on a night where the Jazz didn't have six of their top seven guys. That's not ideal, but in typical Chris Paul fashion after the game, he said,
"I feel good. I'm cool. Yeah, I'll hoop again tomorrow if you want to."
Vegan.
Making a joke about his diet was Devin Booker. He's vegan. Yeah, I'll hoop again tomorrow if you want to. I don't care. Now, it's not ideal that against a shorthanded team like the Utah Jazz were last night, that Chris Paul has to play that many minutes, that Devin Booker has to play that many minutes. But I was driving in, I was listening to Wolf and Luke today. They had Jay Williams on, and he said, man, I give it up to this Suns team. He was equating it to being a radio host, Gambo, and he said sometimes there are just days where, you know, you're in a fender bender or your kid's sick but you come in for 4 hours every day and it's your responsibility to inform and entertain the masses, and you just do it. And he said this is what the Suns do every single time they play. They take very seriously their responsibility to try to win the game that is on the schedule that night, no matter what the circumstances, no matter what's going on. And he said, I have the ultimate respect for a team like that, that every single night they're not mailing it in, they're not half-assing it, they're giving everything they can to win the basketball game, and you just got to have respect for that.
Yeah, it reminds me of a quote the great Joe DiMaggio, the Yankee Clipper, said about, you know, when somebody asked him, why'd you play so hard? And he said, because there might have been somebody in the stands today who'd never seen me play before and might never see me again. And the Suns kind of have this mentality, and I'm baffled by it because, you know, the regular season, as we often say, it doesn't really mean that much for them. But they just, you know, they want to put the foot on the gas pedal and go around the track 500 times and never let their foot off the gas pedal. And that's the way they're doing it. You know, you can take a look at the NFL playoffs, and Green Bay got a chance to rest and Tennessee got a chance to rest. And what happened? They got beat. So, you know, I mean, it's a long season, but Chris Paul takes great care of his body. The other guys do. And Chris Paul, hey, I'll ball again tomorrow. I'm ready. Let's go.
Yeah. Yep, bring it if that's what it takes. Text us your thoughts on the Suns. The FanDuel text line is available to you right now. 620-620 is where you can reach us while we're on the air here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Like we said in the reset, it's not only been the players who have helped turn the Suns around from worst to first. It was the man who put those players on the same roster. James Jones, a multi-year contract extension. What it means for the Suns long-term next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, afternoons.
Live from the Auction Community Studios on this Tuesday afternoon here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. A genuine and heartfelt thank you for hanging out with us on this Tuesday as the Suns beat the Jazz last night. And then this morning, we got word very quickly, first reported by theundefeated.com and then confirmed by the Suns with a press release about a half hour after that. James Jones has been signed to a multi-year contract extension to continue to serve as general manager of the Suns. And certainly this is well-deserved. Certainly nobody, not a soul who's been paying even a fraction of attention to this team over the last 2 years would debate or dispute whether James Jones has earned this. He has absolutely earned it, Gambo. And obviously, he's done things that very few general managers can do. And that is that he's got almost every decision he's ever made right. He's not batting 1,000. But if he's not as close as you can get in this industry to batting 1,000 when it comes to his decisions, there are very few mistakes that he has made in the early part of his career running this organization.
All right, you want to have some fun?
Sure.
Inside the Sun, they're on Twitter delivering you latest Sun scores, news, rumors, and stuff. They did an interesting angle. Somebody sent this to me.
Okay.
A thread of the 10 best James Jones moves.
Oh. Okay.
I'm going to go from 10 to 1. You ready?
This should be fun. Let's do this.
Yeah, let's have some fun
with this. Let's have some fun.
Listen,
you know, go ahead.
We all agree James Jones deserves a contract extension. Okay, let's move on. Hey, James Jones got a contract. Great. He's awesome. Like, great. Give him a contract extension. Let's have some fun.
All right.
10 best moves. Number 10. Acquiring Torrey Craig.
Oh, boy. I said easy, big fella. Come on.
Torrey Craig from the Bucks for cash consideration.
Do you want to send me the list so you can leave it to the professional talker to spit it out, or would you like to continue? It's up to you.
I'm going to continue. I want to continue.
Okay.
I'm getting like Rob Fredrickson's like, you know, everybody's getting on me that I don't know what the shapes of maps are.
Yeah, that's what you get for giving Twitter a loaded gun like that.
I'm going to give Twitter another one that I'm working on today to see if they can get this. Okay. Number 9, signing Bismack Biyombo for the remainder of the season. That was number 9.
Okay.
Number 8, signing JaVale McGee on a 1-year, $5 million contract.
Okay.
Number 7, signing Cam Payne. After being out of the NBA, Payne got his big break by joining the Suns in the bubble. That's number 7. Number 6, the trade. Trevor Ariza, that bum, for Kelly Oubre Jr. and Austin Rivers. Oubre had a career year with the Suns. 18.7 points, 6.4 rebounds.
Okay.
Number 5, signing Ricky Rubio in free agency to a 3-year, $51 million deal.
I know that's one of your favorites.
Man, they needed a point guard so bad. Think about how bad that point guard play was. They got Ricky Rubio. It stabilized everything. They went from having one of the worst point guards to just a middle-of-the-pack guy. Just a solid point guard. Number 4, signing Jay Crowder to a 3-year, $29.1 million deal.
Okay.
Number 3, trading Jarrett Culver to the T-Wolves for Cam Johnson and Dario Saric.
Yeah. I'm writing these down, by the way. So, okay. I'm hanging on every word, Gambo. I'm just writing these down. So, go ahead.
Number 2, hiring Monty Williams on a 5-year deal.
Oh, boy. I know what number 1 is.
After 19-63 season, Jones hired Monty, and the rest is history. NBA Coach of the Year, Pacific Division champs, Western Conference Finals champs, finals appearance, all of that. Number 1, trading for Chris Paul. That is Inside the Sun on Twitter. They had 1 through 10. That's what they had. Chris Paul, Monty Williams. I just went over all of them. I'm not going to go over them again. I had some fun looking at it. Somebody sent it to me, and I said, you know what? It's pretty cool. I like that. I like it.
Do you have, okay, without going through them again, do you have any issues? Do you have any, if you were to rearrange it, do you have one that you would put higher, one that you would move down a little bit lower?
I have one that I might put in there.
Okay, what is that?
Aaron Baines.
Okay.
I don't know if he's good enough to make that top 10, but it's the first thing I thought of was, you know, the Suns getting Aaron Baines. I mean, he
wasn't that, if I remember right, that was the 2020 first round pick that ended up being Desmond Bane, and they got Baines, and then they got a draft pick and they used it on Ty Jerome, right? Wasn't that that deal?
Yeah, it was part of the Ty Jerome trade.
Okay, that's right. Okay.
It was part of the Ty Jerome trade.
Okay.
Baines, you know, yeah, so they got the pick and they got Baines, and he was a good player for them. I think he helped with DA. I think he helped, and I got hurt, and that was the thing. But, you know, that guy was the three-point shooter, and he was a tough guy, and he came in, and we didn't want to bring him back after that first year. But, you know, when I look at Ricky Rubio and Kelly Oubre and Aaron Baines, I got to put them all together in helping the Suns get over the hump of being an awful basketball team and being okay. Now, would you put that ahead of any of the other 10? Maybe, maybe not. But that's one that comes to mind for me.
No, that is a good one. I think these are probably the 10 I would have on my list. I'll be honest with you. I don't think I would have Ariza and Oubre as high as they have them, just because that was kind of an accident, right? That was not how that deal was originally intended to be.
No. Remember the battle on Twitter that night?
Oh, sure. Like which Brooks was the
right
source of the trade? Which Brooks was, you know, Memphis thought it was one and the Suns thought it was the other.
Aaron Brooks and Dylan Brooks. And yeah, that was just crazy night.
And I don't want to discredit what James Jones did, but you got to understand that was kind of an oops. That was kind of a happy accident that they ended up with Kelly Oubre in all of that, because that was not how that was designed to go down. So I would probably slot that one down a couple of slots, and maybe, to be perfectly honest with you, I would probably move Campaign up a little bit, just given that Campaign was out of the league, playing in China, total scrap heap of basketball. It was, I still remember the day they signed him. It was such an afterthought on our show. It was like, oh yeah, by the way, the Suns signed Campaign today. They need a body going into the bubble for Orlando. And it was almost like this shrug of the shoulders, who cares? And then to be able to find a backup point guard with the skills that he brings literally off the scrap heap like that, I think I would probably slot that higher than the accident that was acquiring Kelly Oubre, just because there was more kind of intention there. I tell you, the one that I struggle with the most in a way is Chris Paul, only because Chris Paul chose the Suns. I mean, James Jones didn't make that happen, with all due respect to James. Chris Paul made that happen, right?
But would Chris Paul have come here if there was no Monty, if there was no James?
That's fair.
James hired Monty.
That's totally fair. But it was also how they played in the book, how they played in the bubble, which is also reflective of the job James Jones did. I you know, a great GM makes great deals, but I kind of feel like the Chris Paul one more landed in his lap than anything else. Like, hey, by the way, we're the greatest generational point guard of the last 30 years, wants to play on your basketball team. Yeah, sure, let's make that happen. You know, I don't know how much burning up the phone lines James Jones had to do to make that one happen, if you know what I mean.
Listen, you know, to me, you know, maybe we could have put, you know, him buying the fans beer in there. Like, that could have been a top 10 move.
I like it.
James Jones delivers beer to the fans when Josh Jackson doesn't show up.
I love that. Josh,
I mean, I also think you could look at, could we have looked at deals that were made to get rid of guys? Like, well, Josh Jackson?
T.J. Warren, Josh Jackson, those are the two that come to mind.
T.J. Warren's good. He's out for the year, T.J. Warren. He's always hurt, and he's hurt now. But they traded, you know, Josh Jackson, DeAnthony Melton, you know, just for Javon Carter. But it wasn't what they got back. More or less, it was addition by subtraction. Getting rid of Josh Jackson was a necessity for the development of Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton and those players. They had to get rid of him. I mean, he was a clubhouse cancer. He was terrible. And they redid that. Then they added Rubio, and they added Baines, and they added Saric. They traded T.J. Warren. But they got rid of T.J. Warren, and they got rid of Josh Jackson. Would trading Josh Jackson and just getting rid of him be worthy of a top 10 selection in great moves for for James Jones.
It could absolutely be argued. And it does seem a little early to put Bismack Biyombo on this, even though he has been extraordinary in the limited time he's been on the roster. Like, what a find he's been. I'll tell you right now, I mean, Chris Paul, huge. Hiring Monty, obviously a culture-changing moment for the organization. But trading the draft rights of Jarrett Culver for the draft rights to Cam Johnson and Dario Saric is maybe one of my favorite moves on this whole list. That was sheer genius, because at the time, I remember thinking to myself, oh, man, I don't know if James Jones knows what the hell he's doing. What did he just do? You know,
Cam Johnson went where?
Yeah, exactly.
Kobe White.
Kobe Love.
Cam Johnson went where?
That's so love, bro.
That's so love, bro. You don't understand.
I remember that night thinking, oh, no, this is a disaster. What has he done?
I talked to two GMs that night. And one absolutely loved him, said he shot. One GM told me that he had the best shooting workout of any player that they had brought in. And another one told me that good player, just a shooter, could have got him lower in the draft. So, but he thought he was a first rounder, but thought that was way too high, which most people thought. But I spoke with two general managers that night, and one who had him in for a workout said he shot better than anybody they had in out of all the guys they brought in. He absolutely loved him. He thought the Suns got a great player. Another one thought that he just got drafted way too high, that he could have got picked in the 20s.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, free agency season in the NFL set to begin in a couple of months. And though not every name we're about to go over is going to be available on the free agent market, some of them will. How do they rank? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, afternoons.
4:30 in the afternoon, time to get an update on our Twitter poll question of the day. None of the above is not an option for this question. Let's roll it out with our very own Eric Ruby here on the Burns and Gambo show.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Said we were going to do it yesterday, we are doing it today. Who are you going to root for on Sunday in the NFC title game?
Yeah, man. And people are a little mad. They're like, why are you asking this question? Oh, I'm not rooting for anybody. Well, duh. Nobody wants them to be there. But if you had to, who are you polling for? It's a football game. You choose one side. Anyway, Rams or 49ers?
49ers. This is, and part of this question, too, is inspired for you new listeners of the Burns and Gambo show. If you've just kind of stumbled upon us, Gambo is a big, big believer that you've got to have a rooting interest going into a game.
Have to.
You can't just sit there and watch a game for what it is, that you have to be rooting for somebody. I don't know if I agree with that necessarily, but because I've watched some games where I really don't care at all who wins, but in this situation, I would very much like the Rams to lose, very much, even though that means rooting for a division rival of the 49ers. I'm all for San Francisco on this one.
Yeah, and so are the fans. 72.6% say 49ers, 27.4% say Rams, and a lot of people are commenting maybe not so nice things about those teams, maybe that they're rooting for an asteroid, that they're rooting for a sudden death overtime where both teams lose. A lot of people don't want anyone to win this game. Unfortunately, that's not how it goes.
Is it better than Seattle Rams or Seattle San Francisco?
Boy,
I think Seattle-Los Angeles would be the worst.
Seattle-Los Angeles would be absolutely the worst.
Okay. San Francisco. So if you took Seattle, the Rams, and San Francisco and said, look, pick your poison. One of them is going to win a Super Bowl.
Yes.
Who would you would pick San Fran?
I would pick San Fran.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. We agree? Disagree?
Yeah, I don't have the. I mean, there was a little rivalry in Warner's time when the 49ers and the Cardinals were pretty good. Remember, Warner was going to go there, and Darnell Dockett was going to go there, and they had that defense, and they were good. And then Seattle became the team, and now the Rams. So, it's kind of been, I mean, there's a little bit of a rivalry with everybody, to be honest with you.
There has. I'm just speaking now from an emotional place, that San Francisco, for me, and this is just me, I understand not everybody may agree with this, San Francisco just doesn't quite stir the passion or the hatred the way Seattle or the Rams do. It just doesn't quite, they don't piss me off as much as those other two teams piss me off. You know, and again, that might not be the common view for everybody, but for me, the 49ers just don't make me as angry as those other two teams do. So I would root for the 49ers in that circumstance.
Yeah, I'll go for the 49ers too.
Okay. Free agency starting on, and by the way, news coming from the Phoenix Suns. Our own Kellen Olsen just tweeted out, tomorrow against the Jazz, no DeAndre Ayton, no Jay Crowder, no campaign. They have all been ruled out, so we will not see DeAndre Ayton tomorrow again against Utah in the second night, if you will, of this back-to-back. Haven't heard who's not going to play for Utah. As soon as we do, we'll pass that along. Free agency in the NFL, March 16th. Of course, the Cardinals used free agency last year to great effect in terms of improving their football team. J.J. Watt, A.J. Green, Colt McCoy, Matt Prater, James Conner, and we go on and on. They really dipped into the free agent waters, and they came out with some guys who, for the most part, really improved the product all year long. Free agency this year is going to be, I think, different a little bit for the Cardinals in the sense that they might not be able to go on that same kind of shopping spree necessarily and get as many players as they did. They're going to have a lot of decisions to make, Gambo, and for some, now there's a story this morning on ESPN.com, what is the most important free agent decision facing every team? ESPN.com chose Chandler Jones. I don't agree with that. I'm pretty sure you don't agree with that either, but certainly in terms of star power, he's a guy who is going to get a lot of attention around free agency if the Cardinals do not bring him back, and we don't think they are.
No, I think there's a better chance they end up with Hassan Reddick than they do Chandler Jones. I think they'll move on from Chandler Jones. I think there's an age thing there. He's 32. Hassan's 27. The money may actually be cheaper for Hassan. Look, Hassan went out on a one-year prove-it deal with Carolina, $8 million deal, only six was guaranteed, and he proved it. He got another double-digit sack performance in the last 2 years. He's in top five in sacks in the last 2 years. He's young. The Cardinals like him. It's not like they don't like him, but they just didn't want to pay him, and they had a chance to go get J.J. Watt. Well, I think this year I would expect Chandler goes somewhere else because Chandler wants to get paid. And I would think that the Cardinals, like you've said many times, you're going to have to come up with a pass rusher. You can't just say, I've got J.J. Watt and Marcus Golden. That's not going to get it done. You've got to have a pass rush. I mean, that's how the Rams got at Brady. They pressured him. They got to him. You got to be able to pressure the quarterback. And I think that, you know, Hassan Reddick to me makes a lot of sense if they can get him.
Yeah, if they can get him. And that's my whole point about Chandler Jones is if the Cardinals want to move on and let him walk and let him go somewhere else, I'm not going to be terribly opposed to that. He is going to be 32 this upcoming season, and I don't know how well he's going to age and how overpaid he's going to be. But you are going to have to spend money on somebody to be a pass rusher. You don't have enough on your roster as it is right now to be able to survive that loss. I hope Reddick is available. I'd love to see Reddick come back. I have a little voice inside my head telling me he's not going to be available, that he's going to get locked up by Carolina before it even gets to that point, and they might have to turn their attention somewhere else. I know ESPN ranked the best 50 players potentially on the free agent market this offseason. They had Chandler Jones 16th overall. They had Hassan Reddick 20th overall. They had Christian Kirk 39th overall. And then around the rest of the division, they had Seattle safety Quandre Diggs, 24th overall. Their left tackle, Dwayne Brown, 44th overall. They had Laken Tomlinson, offensive lineman for the 49ers, 38th overall. There were guys on this list. The question with any list like this, Gambo, is always going to be who actually makes it to free agency, right? You can be on a top 50 list now on January 25th. But by the time March 16th rolls around, half the guys on this top 50 list might not be available because they've either been tagged or re-signed.
There is something in the info on Christian Kirk that jumped out to me, man. It hit me like a ton of bricks.
Okay, hit me.
And we've had debates about Christian Kirk. What's he worth? Probably somewhere in the $10 to $13 million range. But listen to this. Christian Kirk was number 39 as far as the free agents, as you just mentioned. He's going to be 25 years old going into this next season. He's young.
He's young.
But listen to what they wrote about him. Kirk was also among the league's most efficient receivers, catching 75.5% of throws he was targeted on. That was the sixth best rate in the National Football League.
Did that blow your mind, Gambo?
You know, I mean, there are certain times when, you know, I'm not the biggest stat guy and stuff, but there are certain things that you that matter, and that matters. Like that matters. Whoever put that together, sixth best rate of catching passes he was targeted on in the NFL. When you throw him the ball, he catches the ball. That's important. He catches the football. 75.5% of the throws he was targeted on, he caught. Sixth best rate in the league. I like Christian Kirk. I've told you I like him. I want to keep him. I hope they're able to do it.
Yeah. Just real quick, before we get too late for a break, does that stat suggest to you that you have to keep Christian Kirk if you're the Cardinals, or does that stat suggest to you that Christian Kirk might get more money in free agency than you thought because of a number like
that? This is, because of DeAndre Hopkins, you don't have to keep him. Because you have a number one receiver, one of the best in the NFL, that doesn't mean you have to, you know, you have to pay for a number two or a number three guy. They paid $6 million for their number two guy last year. If you're going to get Kirk, you're not getting him for $7 million. That number is somewhere around 10, 11, 12, maybe $13 million. That's a lot of money. Now, if you're saying to yourself, "Hey, if I sign him, I can't do this, this, and this. I'd rather just go get another receiver and pay $6 million. I'll save $7 million. I use that money elsewhere." I can understand. I don't like it, but I can understand it.
Sammy Hagar and George Thorogood are heading to Akshin Pavilion for their Crazy Times Tour. Tickets go on sale this Friday at 10 a.m., but you can win a pair now by visiting the contest page at arizonasports.com. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, we had Brian Billick on the show earlier, the new offensive analyst for Herm Edwards and ASU, three former head coaches who now have a job to do, trying to figure out how to navigate their way through a college football landscape that is changing by the day. We'll explain next on the Burns and Gambo show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo afternoons.
We'll talk college football in a minute. Just passing along a couple of the pieces of information about the Suns. We already mentioned Ayton Crowder and Cameron Payne out for the game tomorrow against the Jazz. You can add JaVale McGee to the list. He will not play tomorrow as well with knee soreness, which means a whole lot
of Bismack Biyombo. Jalen Smith may play.
Yeah, well, I would imagine.
A little Jalen Smith.
I would imagine. We got a little Jalen Smith. We got a little Bismack Biyombo. Yep, that is going to be a big thing tomorrow when the Suns take on the Jazz. And then the other news, I imagine most people have heard about this by now, but maybe not, since you might be in the car or you might not be, you know, dialed into social media or whatever. David Ortiz, the only player to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame this year. He was the only one who got the requisite number of votes. Barry Bonds got 66%. Roger Clemens got 65%. You were right about Curt Schilling. He went backwards. He got 58.5%.
Crazy. People that voted for him last year didn't vote for him this year.
Yeah, no, it
got worse. He had a bad year. I mean, ERA was 4.25, and I remember that game where he gave up six runs in the first inning against the Padres. It was terrible.
The whole thing has become almost
joke. It's a joke.
It's really difficult to follow. It really has.
Hate it.
I'm getting to hate it too. It's getting, and I've been to the Baseball Hall of Fame, man. I've loved every single visit I've made there. I've been there three times, and I've really enjoyed it. But at this point, man, the gatekeepers of letting people in, it has just gotten so skewed. And
if you vote for a guy once, what would make you not vote for him again? Like, if you think he's worthy of getting in in 2018, why would you not vote for him in 2019? Like,
right.
If you think he should be in, you think if at any point you say, "I think this guy should be in a Hall of Fame," well, then you should always think he should be in a Hall of Fame.
Sure, sure. And then you're talking about being arbiters of who did PEDs, who didn't. You know, David Ortiz gets in. We don't know whether he did or didn't. Barry Bonds doesn't get in. It's all become so muddled and so complicated and so convoluted, and it's very difficult to celebrate it now. It really becomes very difficult to celebrate when things like this happen because it's just so complicated. In the meantime, we had Brian Billick on the show earlier today. He got hired yesterday as a new offensive analyst for ASU football. Very happy to be a part of it.
Huge. And not just the offenses, but just the process, the way Bill practiced back then. I was with Bill for 2 years in his first 2 years with the 49ers. I was on his administrative staff. And to watch him piece this together and what he was doing and how he was doing it is basically the template of what everybody in the NFL is doing right now.
That's Brian Billick talking about the influence of Bill Walsh in football, a guy that he grew up under. But Gambo, the world of college football, the coaches now have to navigate. It's
so different.
It's really changing right before our eyes, isn't it?
Well, there are 6,000 college football players that are in the transfer portal right now. 57% of the high school kids that signed with a program are now in the transfer portal. The problem with 6,000 kids in the portal is that there might be about 300 scholarships available. You can only give 25 scholarships in a calendar year. Schools run out of scholarships quickly, and a lot of those scholarships go to young players. They go to young high school kids. So 6,000 kids entering the portal thinking that the grass is green. A lot of them end up in Division II or Division III. It's allowed coaches to weed out players with issues by saying, hey, you know, it's not working out here. Maybe you should go somewhere else. Look, ASU's lost players. They lost Johnny Wilson. He's in the portal. They lost Tommy Hill. He's in the portal. They lost 3 4-star kids that they recruited last year. 3 of their 4-star kids from last year are in the transfer portal. Look, I know the one player they didn't want to lose was Chip Traynham, but, you know, they're from Ohio. His mom's from Ohio. I believe that they wanted to go home. He would have been their number one running back. He's going to Ohio State. So Traynham was the one guy they didn't want to lose, but they've added a bunch of players in the portal, too. They've added some good football players, you know, from the portal. But it's just, and it's different, and it's going to get worse because the NIL is really changing football. Because now, like, there's a baseline of what you can offer a quarterback, a running back, a wide receiver.
Before you go on, let's explain to everybody what the NIL is. It's the imaging and licensing agreement that players now have so that they can basically advertise for companies while they're in college and be paid for that. So I want to explain everybody what that is. If you're not familiar with what NIL is, it's basically a license for college athletes to be able to be paid in addition to the scholarships that they're earning by essentially endorsing a company and doing, in essence, commercials for them. Yeah. That's what NIL is.
It's going to make it very hard for ASU to continue to get 4-star kids, 5-star kids. First thing they're going to ask is, what are you offering? There are schools out there offering $100,000, $150,000, $200,000. In some cases, you might be able to get $1 million. I've heard USC already has a gigantic budget for NIL with donors. It might be around $5 million and expected to go much higher. I mean, ASU, they can't match that, right? They're working with peanuts. So, the haves continue to have more. The have-nots continue to have less. It's going to be it's changing the recruiting. It's changing it. It's going to be very difficult for ASU to go get these 4- and 5-star players. The biggest NIL deal that ASU has is with Jaden Daniels. He's got a car deal. Hey, somebody gave him a car, but they just don't have the means to compete with a lot of these other schools. So the rich are going to get richer with the way things have changed in college football, and I think it's going to change the way programs like ASU have to recruit.
Yeah, and that's why when Deion Sanders got that number one recruit to go to Jackson State University, it was such a shock to the system for everybody because people assumed, like you said, and I still think at the end of the day this will end up being correct, but people assumed that the rich, the Clemsons and the Bamas and the Georgias and the Ohio States would just get richer with a deal like this. Then along came Deion Sanders at little teeny tiny Jackson State University, but because he's got that deal with Barstool and because he's Deion Sanders, he was able to lure the number one recruit in the country to come to that teeny tiny school, in part because of what was thought to be all this money behind that. But I think when it's all said and done, you're right. This is another advantage towards schools that already have tremendous advantages. I mean, look, ASU, I'm not going to sit here and cry too many rivers for ASU in that they've had 25 years to be an impactful college football program since going to the Rose Bowl, and they really have failed to do that before there was an NIL. So I'm not going to sit here and have too much sympathy for ASU and their inability to compete. But I would agree that when talking about the big boys in your own conference and talking about the big boys in college football, it would seem like the NIL is going to divide teams into the haves and the have-nots. And if you're not one of the haves, you're going to have a hard time competing. Very hard time.
Yeah, just the amount of money that is available for these programs that they can offer $100,000, $150,000, $200,000. It really is going to make it very difficult. I mean, the donor base here just can't compete with what the donor base at USC and Alabama and Georgia and Florida and those schools. They just can't compete with that. So, you know, the playing field is not even. It's going to continue to get, you know, probably it's just going to change it. It's going to change it. So, you know, it's really and a lot of these kids are going to want that now, right? Hey, what can you offer? I want to know what can I get? You know, I mean, I got this one school's willing to give me and my dad a car. Me and my dad are both going to get a car. What can you give me? And so that's going to be that's going to be a focal point when it comes to kids and where they decide to go.
When we come back, the Suns are on a 7-game win streak despite many injuries along the way. And this guy stepped up last night amid all those injuries. Ish Wainwright is next up for our weekly Suns player segment here on the Burns and Gambo Show.